Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What do you think about Guy and leggings? Do you like the fact that I'm wearing leggings today?
Guy who?
Guy Fawkes and leggings. Do you like Guy Fawkes when he wears leggings?
It's not something I've pictured previously to this conversation.
I got a hole in mine.
Right. You've got two holes.
Yeah, I got two holes in my leg. Well, I thought I'd wear leggings today because
it's from your acidic ball sweat.
Just your spaniel's ears hanging down your legs. But tuck them into your socks.
I used to do this thing at school where even though we're in all boys school, but I thought it was hilarious. I would take my penis out of my fly. And I would take my two pockets on the outside and I'd take them out, so the two pockets on the other side. So it looked like an elephant. And then run into the room and go...
Pretend I
was an elephant.
Why are you not still doing this? You can with the hole in your leggings.
Yeah, but I think it'd be a bit weird.
Actually, if you got no pockets.
If I walked into the room this morning and just did that, I think everyone would think I was slightly mad.
Yeah.
You know? Hello everyone, welcome to Private Parts Podcast. This is where we read the most intimate and sordid details of our lives. Now, our guest today, I've changed it, do you like that? I normally say join. Our guest today is Will Satch. Hi, Will.
Hello.
Will Satch, MBE, member of the British Empire.
Now, yeah.
Will Satch, we are going to get into this. William Spencer Satch.
Yeah, born, dad's name.
Born June the 9th, 1989, 29 years old.
Well, I don't need to mention that. Getting older.
I'm 24, so I don't...
Oh, for God's sake. Don't show off.
No, I'm not. I'm 30.
And he's dead.
But, Will, I'm going to go through... Before we kick things off, I'm going to go through how... So, Will, you're a rower, but I'm going to go through all of your medals that you've won, because this is pretty freaking impressive.
About a good 4 years, basically.
No, but...
A bit of a has-been now.
No, not at all. This is what's so insane. You have...
Start from the bottom.
Do you know what? If you put all these medals round your neck and jumped into the water,
I'd sink.
You're like an anchor. Mm. Okay, so we got a goal. Start from the bottom, go upwards.
Yeah.
Okay, so in European Championships, they're for the eight. We have in 2016 a bronze, 2014 a bronze, 2015 a silver in the eight. World Championships, we have the Coxless Four. Coxless Four, which is bronze in 2017. 2015, we have a gold. 2014, gold. 2013, gold. And then the Olympic Games, 2012, Coxless Pair, bronze. In 2016, Rio de Janeiro, the eight, gold.
Yeah, the big one.
Holy smokes, man. Welcome to the show.
All right.
I remember I saw you after you got your bronze.
In London.
Yeah, in London. Yeah. I bumped into...
We bumped in. We had a few drinks, actually.
Yeah,
hang on, you're an athlete. What are you doing? You can't drink.
Well, it's done. You have 11 nights of lawless partying.
God, that's when you just go... You basically just go and, like, drink everything and go to every...
Yeah.
Thing
you're pretty mental.
Yeah, I would go... You would go nuts. You'd tear the universe a new one, wouldn't you, Francis?
Tear a new asshole on the universe.
You can do that every night anyway.
Of course.
What's holding you back?
He's just obsessed with assholes. That's why.
God. tearing them.
Obsessed with tearing.
You've got a thing about tearing arseholes.
I get something called an anal fissure.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, have you ever had an anal fissure?
No.
Not an anal fissure.
You know when you
didn't you get like a coffee enema and they tore your...
No. What was that? Have you had that?
I had a clonic irrigation,
What, with Kenko? Pipe Knot Kenko?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
How does that actually work?
Oh, here we go.
I don't think it's hot, is it? Is it hot?
I am intrigued.
Yeah, I don't remember mine being hot, but so I had chronic irrigation, which is basically where they flush out your body, and I sort of, what they do is you walk into a room, and they put like a cloak on you, so you know those like hospital cloaks, yeah, and then your butt is showing, and then you have to lie in the fetal position on a hospital bed, and you face the wall, and you sort of look over your shoulder, and the nurse or doctor, whoever you desire, or whoever wants to do it.
Who did you insist on?
I was like
a nurse. Let the nurse do it.
The male nurse.
Let the nurse in.
And I'm ready. And enter me.
Poor woman. Was it a woman?
It was a woman, yeah.
Oh, God.
And I said, and I was lying on my side, and they bring out what looks like a... do you ever remember...
A cafetiere.
I love it when Francis finds something so funny. He laughs as he's saying it.
But you know, get quite a strong aeropress and just really punch it in.
They don't. Well, they do. It looks like a... do you remember like lightsabers? It looks like a see-through, lightsaber type thing. And it's about probably, what is it? It's like the size of a ruler.
What size ruler?
No, like lengthwise, 30 centimeters. And
that goes all the way up. Right?
Yes, yeah, so school ruler. And they lubricate it, and then...
What do they lubricate?
They lubricate the sort of wand.
Not the actual...
Not the anus, no.
You don't do a little...
They don't lubricate the anus. And
straight in.
And then they say, you ready? And you sort of say... And I turned to him and said, God, do a lot of guys do this?
Do you not have to relax your stomach? Isn't there quite a lot of...
You have to relax...
Breathing.
Yeah. So you sort of...
Did you have to, like, empty your bowels beforehand?
I didn't. Which is obviously a bit of an issue, I think, which I obviously worked out. And then you... And then they...
Wait, so you needed a
I went in fully loaded. Which was a surprise to both of us.
Much to the frustration of the male nurse.
Trying to angle the way through it all. Anyway, they sort of put it up. And what they do, it's like they turn on a tap almost. And it feels like your whole stomach is filling up with water. Your backside is filling up with water. And then they release it and it flushes
out. It's
like
liters. Liters,
yeah, it's liters and liters. But also, it sort of goes through this pipe, right, which goes into the thing, and that's where the waste goes. But the pipe is see-through, so you can see everything coming out. Which I just, why don't they just make it black so you can't see anything through it?
What you had the night before? Curry.
I can't remember. Yeah. Okay. Oh, the night before I don't really remember what I had, but it was intense.
Okay. Yeah. Were they like, well, you definitely didn't clear the bowels beforehand?
Well, I felt I didn't clear the bowels, because as soon as the rod went in, I needed a... go to the bathroom. And then,
maybe that's just like a normal thing.
But then they finish it, they take it out, and then very kindly they wipe your backside for you. So you feel, you literally feel like a fetus.
You don't need to do, all right.
Yeah. You don't, wait. Okay, fine.
So I've actually got a bit of a story with that as well. So a friend of mine who was in the 8 with me, I won't mention his name, but who knows?
We can probably guess. There's 7 of them. So,
one of 7 people.
I won't mention his name. We go away on camp and obviously get very bored. And it's a group of guys. And, you know, when you're like 2 weeks in...
You're blindfold yourselves.
Yeah. We won't get into that. But we go out of Portugal quite a lot. And it can be quite monotonous. Rowing's quite fairly boring as it is. So we go out rowing, do all the mileage, come in. Same every day. And he's having a few issues with his stomach. So we ordered in a colonic irrigation, like the full system.
Well, as you do.
For the
as
whole age.
Nah,
for
just for him. And we peer pressured him in. And he did it. And he said it was an experience.
You were all quite jealous, actually.
Well, there's a furious sort of crowded around watching him do it to make sure he did do it. And he's sort of, you know, in the fetal position on the floor, rubbing his belly.
He did it in front of all of you?
Well, a couple of us, close friends.
all 7 of you.
was it a coffee one?
No, I was tempted to just pack a load of coffee in sort of halfway through, but I thought that'd be a bit harsh. It was warm, warm. Is there a certain
saline
type of
saline?
Yeah, there is a little one.
Not that I just guess.
just randomly. Yeah.
But Will, you are a fantastic rower. You've rowed in the eight and all these kind of things. I just want to know how. My brother was a rower. He rowed at Henley, and all of us have probably tried rowing at some points, but not to your sort of competitive level. Mm. How tiring is it? The actual race, final, the Rio Olympics. You want to win gold. You're going for it. You're all eight of you in there. You're sitting there at the beginning. First, I want to know, when you're at the beginning of that race, you've worked for 4 years till this moment. Mm. Firstly, what are you feeling at that moment before they release you?
We're quite nervous.
Yeah.
For
at
me,
the start.
Yeah. Well, no, like at leading up. Like you said, it's 4 years. So if you train, we're doing 200K a week. And you're training for a 5 minute 13 under race.
You're earning 200K a week.
If only. Far from that. So it's savage. You're focusing on this. You've got one shot, and it's every 4 years, and you're training like a madman every day. So you kind of, there's a lot of pressure there. It's very different for me from London to Rio. Rio, I was up on a pedestal. We'd won three world championships leading up, so I felt the pressure probably a little bit more. And I didn't want to let the other guys kind of know that, because it can all get, it's quite claustrophobic coming in.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it can be contagious if you get a bad, a bad vibe in the boat.
Massively.
You
know,
really affects.
Really, does that happen? If you get a bad vibe, does that kind of sort of start to ruffle feathers?
You've just got to shoot that down. Yeah. That's not happening here, I'm afraid. Yeah. But basically, Rio, you're there to... I wouldn't say you're there to race, you're there to collect. You focus so much on this and you put a lot on the side. Family, you miss a lot of stuff. Yeah. Relationships break down, stuff, it's constant. It's
no
a lifestyle.
No social life, anything, right?
Well, some of us. I like to a little bit. It's my way of sort of switching off, but I do have to keep a lid on it. But then, if I'm honest with you, crossing the line of Rio, I didn't actually feel anything, which is a really weird concept. Because you build it up in your imagination, what it's going to be like to achieve my childhood dream.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you cross the line, and it was like, it just felt like a job was done, and the pressure valve was released, which was a nice feeling.
Really? And you feel like, did you feel like you had to celebrate? We didn't really feel like celebrating in a way.
Well, it felt really strange. I know when I'm old and, I've got grandkids, and handing them an Olympic gold medal would be when it's special.
Yeah.
But because I'm still in the process now and I'm trying to do it again, you've got to forget about the past and focus on the future. I think that's the only way to attack a new goal.
That's really interesting. When something becomes your life, like rowing or...
Because rowing, more than I think any other sport, is a lifestyle.
Yeah. It's like rowing and cycling, isn't it? Yeah. Like the two things. Yeah.
Just endurance based, so it takes up so much time training.
And you have to eat 6,000 calories a day or something.
I don't mind that bit.
Yeah.
That's just quite sweet.
It's just the monotony of training can really get to you sometimes.
But what I find is you're saying that in a weird kind of way, because you're doing it day in, day out, you're living, breathing, everything rowing, it almost, it becomes a job almost, that if you don't win, it's failure. But if you do win, it's just another completed mission.
And that's the way a lot of the media will see it as well. Obviously, Red Graves here have built this dynasty, which is amazing. Mm. But if you win, it's well done. That was expected. And if you don't, it's why didn't you win? Mm. Which is quite a strange concept.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The thing for me that I love is the camaraderie you build. So the friendships I've built throughout, and it sounds quite cliche, but... they're very, very special. I raced with a guy at London who I raced domestically, and you've probably raced him, Francis, for 5 years when I was at school, and I was hopeless. I lost every race, but I raced him for those 5 years, and then all of a sudden you're at a home Olympics with your best mate, racing a final. So that will always be probably the most special moment.
And actually, so I should put that in context a bit, because we haven't really spoken about that. Yeah. But Will and I are childhood friends. Yeah. We met actually playing rugby.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow with Shopify.
Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
B. Is that what we met playing rugby? Maybe?
Yeah, I think Dana Henley.
Yeah,
I think our mothers were.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And you were like, "Hey, we should be friends."
We're ginger.
Yeah. Hey, we're the only two gingers in the team.
Yeah,
but hey, ginger, we should.
I think
there
was a third actually. Harry.
Yeah, exactly. But who I saw actually recently.
But he was killed, wasn't he?
Yeah. So he's still alive?
Yeah. He was killed by everyone else. Get out of here.
There wasn't room for three of us. But actually, I remember that. That team that we had at Henley Rugby Club was like, I seem to remember us just winning everything.
Yeah, we did.
We won like everything.
So you guys have known each other for ages.
And then we also rode together at Upper Thames.
Yeah.
You know.
But so it's a club like opposite.
So I rode at Henley Rowing Club but also rode at my school. But we were in the same year, so we rode against
each other. And they're kind of similar sized schools as well. Yeah. So it's like that domestic rowing scene, which is
we used to train together. So we used to train together at our schools. Used to train together. Occasionally.
Hey, I was Radley College boys.
Yeah, so you probably pumped as well.
Yeah, so I was. We got Will Satch, who was at Shiplake, Francis at Oratory.
All similar areas.
Yeah. But what I find so amazing, my brother Rowan, he rode at Henley. And he rode the eight, and he says this amazing story, and he won Henley against some American team in 2010 or something like that, or 2009. And I was there watching him, and he said there's an amazing story which still to this day sends shivers down me. So there's a moment, and well, you can correct me if I'm wrong, there's a moment in rowing where you have been rowing for I don't know how many kilometers it is or how many miles it is, you've been going, and there's a moment where your Cox, who's the guy at the front of the boat who's basically driving, and also I suppose your hype man in a sense, the one to keep you going, he keeps you cheering
the
on.
One you want to punch,
yeah, the one you want to punch. who doesn't do anything tiring but keeps you row and keeps you in time and everything like that. And there's a moment in a race where the Cox normally gives you a signal, says something, and that's when you just burst. That's when you just give everything you have in your boat. And my brother says there was a moment in Henley when the American crew were neck and neck, and he was at Eton College crew, and they were neck and neck going to this, and that you know how it sort of goes back and forward against each other, so you don't really know which one's winning. And the Cox to the boat, and it's on a speaker, isn't it, so everyone can hear him in the boat. He turns and goes, "Right, boys, this is it. They know it. We know it, and there's nothing they can fucking do about it. Now let's go!" And they just shot off like that. And it was this moment that he was like, "Oh my god!" The whole boat was just like shaking, ready to just fire. It sends shivers. Yeah, it's like a moment. It's amazing,
especially like schoolboy level. That's kind of the dream, you know. Yeah. When that stuff like that happens, it's like I said, it's camaraderie again. Everyone, you're doing it together. You're doing it as a team, and that's what I like about it. I don't want to. I'm not in the single. You've got to. There's so many variables. You've got, you know, eight other mentalities in the boat, including and then yourself. And getting the best out of everyone is bloody hard.
Yeah. It's like aligning
and that's that
the
guy's
stars.
Job.
Yeah.
So he's literally like, he's a jockey. You know, he's got whip and he's just on you the whole time. So the difference is you sort of go, it's a very raw and basic sport, but it's the same the whole way up. But you get in the eighth Olympics and it's basically flat out from where I go. Mm. So as much as it's like, right, let's push on, you're already there.
So that's the thing, when that moment comes, you're actually already what you feel like over your limits.
Yeah.
And then you have then somehow, yeah, somewhere, yeah, 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 somewhere you, get, you more. Find more but, stamina. Yeah. It's like you're pushing yourself. That's what one of the things I loved about rowing is that you do feel like when in a race scenario, you're pushing yourself beyond your limits.
It's
regularly.
Actually it's quite masochistic.
Yeah.
And for Francis, what does masochistic mean? Because he doesn't get he always afterwards he goes to I just didn't get that bit.
What is, you know sadism,
yeah. right?
Sadism, that's when you inflict harm on someone else and you enjoy it.
Oh, masochism, you know, putting on yourself.
Yeah. So rowing,
you quite like a bit of that, don't you? Inflicting pain on yourself.
Well, I love rowing, yeah.
But so it is because you do, you kind of get a thrill out of that moment where you're putting so much energy into it.
Yeah.
But also, when no one grows up wanting to be a cox, do someone go, you know what, I'm going to grow up and be a cox? Is that what happens?
I don't know. I think it's kind of scenario potentially. Like if you're involved, I know a friend of mine. I think he was at Eton. He's a lot older, but he rowed and then he coxed and then he rowed again. So like, you know, Eton obviously, like your brother was there. They were normally quite successful at a junior level, and he got to experience all of that, which is quite uncommon because normally the cox is the smaller guy, the little gobby one who can probably take a bit of. Mm. It's not bullying, but you know.
Yeah, but he just takes it, you know what I mean?
A lot of it.
But also, can you explain that how... Because I just want to know, because we've all done those like ergos and rowing machines, 500-meter sprints, like four times in a row, whatever it is. How tiring is the actual race? And I know you've trained for it, you've prepared for it, you're mentally there, the team is there, but what is the feeling that goes through? Because I've done running before where I just can't push on any further. How do you get your body to go that extra mile?
I was like, for me, I'd always look at the race as like the easy bit because you've, like I said, you turn up to collect, like you've put the miles in. The winter, like now, is where you're putting in the hard graft. That's the miserable bit when you're clocking 200k a week.
Because also to get grinding. To that level, you have to push yourself up to it in the run up to it.
So
you've got to constantly push yourself to new levels. Yeah,
it's almost like bit by bit. So when you get there. You're in a mindset that you want to... I mean, I want to kill. I'm out there and I just, like, you know, you're on the hunt. But you've just got to get amongst it and you're already full of adrenaline. You don't need to... For me, everyone's different, but I don't need to fire myself up. Like, this is it, you know, that's your moment. And I love racing. So as much as the training can be utterly miserable, when it comes round, I'm in my happiest place, if you like. I'm not happy in the moment because it really hurts, but I'm in my good place when I'm in that race.
God, see that's for me, because whenever I used to do athletics or do any sport, the biggest thing for me was my nerves or my fear of how tired I was going to get. I was God, I'm just going to be so knackered, it's going to hurt so much. And that pain that I was preempting was my biggest fear.
Yeah.
But you sort of revel in that, you're saying. You quite like that moment of like, right, here we go, we're going to accept this.
Yeah, and like another chance. I like being in that. Pain weirdly,
but, and harnessing it and using it to like.
But people faint, you know. People faint when they row. People become exhausted. I saw an Oxford versus Cambridge rowing about 4 years ago, where one of the guys fainted and he couldn't get up.
Yeah. I don't know about that. Was he playing up to it?
Oh, is that what happens?
I don't know. I think potentially you do. A lot of people, when you're tested and you're on the machine, you're going through. Obviously, you're trying to beat everyone. And that's actually, I'll go into it. That is the hardest thing of the sport, is you're training every day, you're building up this camaraderie, you end up, like, obviously they're some of your best friends.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, you get seat race. So you're being selected for a seat in a boat. And it's dog eat dog. That's the hard bit, you know, over there. And, you know, it comes up to, like, Olympic trials, final Olympic trials. And everyone wants to get in, obviously. That's the pinnacle of rowing. Everyone's trying to go to the Olympics. So then you've got to go and, you know, beat your best mate to get in. That's probably the hardest bit.
And what is the process? So this is the tricky thing, because you went to Shiplake School, which is a boarding school, right? Which isn't far from kind of Radley, where I went.
Yeah.
And you obviously were rowing there and doing things there. But then what is the process? What is that moment where you go, you know what, I'm actually going to continue rowing?
Well, it's quite a funny one for me, actually. So I was there on a rugby scholarship, and I loved it. I just loved playing.
You were a scrum half.
I wish. Actually, prop. I was quite a big lad.
Were you prop? Yeah, you're when like I was younger. 6 foot five.
Yeah, but I was a big boy. I was probably as heavy as I am now.
When,
I
sort of,
when we were playing back in the day.
Playing as you,
a bit rotund. Yeah. So,
fuck. When you
definitely, I think you definitely lost weight at when you were like 15, 16.
Rowing class, rowing. Yeah.
When you turned up, it must have been like fuck's sake, look how big that guy is.
Like, yeah, but then like in a boat, I was just sinking it and I was rubbish. I did basically, for me, I had 5 years where I was really unsuccessful. Kept getting beaten. And it just gave me fire in my belly. Like, it made me want more. That's the biggest difference between... So going into London, we were selected as like the bottom boat. We weren't on to win. We weren't going to win. Were we going to medal? It was kind of like, go and have a crack, you know? Mm-hmm. And I love being the underdog. That's my favourite place to be.
Yeah, yeah. Francis is in that life.
Yeah.
He loves it as well.
But then all of a sudden, you're up on that pedestal, and that's a lot harder. So like I said, the nerves for me, like leading up to Rio, it was tough because everyone expected it. And we had, you know, two guys in there that were retaining double Olympic champions. Mm. And it was kind of like, oh, these guys are going to do it. But in reality, it's like, it's savage. You know, like,
it's all up for grabs.
Yeah, though, massively.
Yeah. But what I want is, you were quite bad at rowing. You were a bit of a big lad. Then you sort of straightened out a little bit. You kind of just got taller, basically.
At what point do you think...
I want to be a rower.
No, at what point do you think you then... when was it that you suddenly said, okay, this is what I want to do?
My stepdad is, I think, worked for the RFU and like WAS Academy. So he was...
He coached us.
Yeah, he coached us back in the day as well. And he runs the WAS Academy now out of Henley College. So he's very rugby orientated. I love rugby, but I'd go out rowing, and although I was like useless, I just found like tranquility within it, and it used to like calm me down, and it basically just made me able to then work at school. It gave me discipline, and it's given me an awful lot of opportunity. I'm not saying like I was good at rugby. I probably wouldn't have made it. Potentially I would. I don't know. I was sort of on the England schoolboys pathway, but it got to a point where, like I said, even at a young like a junior level, you've got to put so much in to be decent or even just
good. Yeah, that dedication, that commitment.
But I still wasn't getting anything back from it. But I was getting an awful lot of stuff back from it that wasn't results. It was like my schoolwork was better. A lifestyle, I was getting fitter, I was losing weight, I felt stronger, I felt better about myself, my mental health was better. There was a guy, Athol Hundemark, who went to Abingdon, and he's now at Shrewsbury. Like, I got in, and he was just quite an aggressive South African character, and he just sorted me out. He like told me what I needed
to do. Was this your rowing coach?
First rowing coach.
Yeah.
And then I had my next rowing coach was Simon Dennis, who got a gold in the eight in Sydney, and he just really inspired me. And then Shane O'Brien was my tutor at school, and he got a gold in the Coxless Four in Los Angeles. He's a Kiwi, and he was a really big sort of father figure to me. So although I wasn't getting the results, it was kind of like my lifestyle had changed, and I felt quite good about myself.
Yeah.
But then stupidly decided to go and carry on, even though I wasn't successful. But then it kind of worked out.
Yeah.
But there must have been that turning point, because you must have been like rowing and things like that and doing competitions and everything, whatever it was. And there must have been a moment where suddenly it started to click, and actually people started showing attention towards you. Because, you know, you're an Olympic rower, right? Yeah. So there had to be a moment where, like when you go into England schoolboys for rugby, or you're in the under 18 side, suddenly people start to take notice.
Oh, when this was guy's that? Right.
Yeah. you know, we missed the boat on that, buddy. Francis could have been a surfer.
Yeah. Or a rower.
I'm
not really tall enough.
You weren't really tall enough?
No.
I was rugby all
the
way.
Did we beat you ever?
Yeah.
Did we beat you?
I can't remember.
Yeah, did we do that?
Did we beat you?
But no. And then I think one year, you guys just went off, and like you, because you had a really big year.
Yeah. So I came in, and the scholarship changed basically. And
you suddenly had all these massive people.
The year above me
were you a sports scholar?
Yeah, for rugby. So then basically...
Hey, Sam, I was a sports scholar. We're so similar.
All right. I remember...
Yeah, we're similar, maybe. We're just... Hey, are you a sports scholar? No.
Art scholar.
Get out of here.
But I remember actually... I vividly remember racing you in the octuple at your home stretch. That race. You remember? And we were so close, but then you guys won. I think you pipped us in the end.
But
just
Will,
got that one.
But Will, so what
that was the changing moment when I'd done France.
Yeah, exactly. He was like,
you were like, this is the moment I'm going to take it on. But
there can only be one ginger.
Only one ginger in this. But Will, what was that moment? Did someone suddenly come to you and say, "Look, I see you got talent. I see you got this. You're going to be good." What was that?
I took the bull by the horns a bit. I wasn't. Even when I left school, so my last year at Shiplake, I rode out of Leander.
Which is the sort of the notorious kind of like...
rowing club.
But everyone knows...
It's the like elite rowing club.
Yeah.
It's actually got quite an open door policy now, which is great. But at the time, it wasn't. And I was this fat ginger kid in sort of Buzzy Bee leggings.
Yeah, sick. And, welcome to the party.
And the all-in-one. And I was getting beaten by a lightweight female sculler. I was hopeless. But then all of a sudden, I just sort of got it. I grew an extra inch when I was 20, which is quite strange.
How the fuck did you do? I don't grow anything.
But rowing apparently encourages bone growth.
You reckon?
That's what I remember reading that when I was like 16. I was like, rowing, I was going to stick.
There you go. Everyone get rowing.
that's exactly the same way that your mum, you know, carrots you can see in the dark. Some guy went, if you row, your bones grow.
No, but if you think about it, because as you're pulling on your bones, right?
Yeah.
Long arms.
And your long arms. So you get long arms and then your legs catch up.
Quite good. The arms just get really long.
and there's like you said, your brother raced at Henley. There's a tier system at Henley, so you've got the bottom event. It's called the Thames Cup. And for me, that year was my Olympic final, if you like. I focused for a year to do it, and we ended up winning by... It's like kind of knockout rounds at Henley Regatta, and then we ended up winning. And it, like back then, a lot of people have looked at it as sort of being nothing, but actually, to me, it was a really huge feat.
Would you say that was a sort of turning point?
That was a big turning point. And then from then on, I kind of, the following year, basically, I just started to take off. And the trajectory just went up, which was really nice.
But it's amazing that you have that dedication towards a sport, right? And also a sport that, you know, it's an Olympic sport, so notoriously you're not paid the same wage as footballers and things like that. Do you know what I mean?
If only.
Yeah, if only, right?
But keeps you grounded.
Which I think is so key and so great, but the funding for the Olympics isn't quite. But you're choosing a sport, you're going down just because of the love and dedication towards it, which I think is pretty incredible to be that dedicated towards an individual thing.
I think it keeps the sport pure, and it's almost the beauty of the sport. If everyone started getting sort of, you can see it sort of in rugby now, sort of turning slightly football culture.
It is, and which is not good. And
at the same time,
lose their way.
I think a lot of the players, they deserve like decent money because they're putting a lot of time in. With rowing, like, we're very lucky. We're like, we're supported by the National Lottery, so we get a grant. It's enough to get by.
You get 125 million on a Friday. That's insane.
Every Friday.
Every Friday, you're winning the lottery.
But it keeps you humble and it makes you appreciate the sport. And actually, I'm saying this now, I'm injured and I'm not actually doing as much of the training. So I've got a very sort of beautiful kind of picture of the sport. But in reality, you know, after Rio, when I'd achieved it, did I want to come back? Nah, fuck no.
Yeah.
Were you thinking about...
Massively. Yeah. I was in quite a long-term relationship. My ex-girlfriend was a doctor. You know, things were moving on. I could have just, you know, thrown it.
And I suppose it's like when and a lot of girls who are pregnant and then give birth, they're like, I'm not doing that again. That was intense. Yeah. I feel like it's exactly the same. Yeah.
You're going to have a lot of women.
Yeah, I know.
Saying,
in my
shut
experience,
up.
Ladies, it's exactly the same as rowing.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that.
but you know what I mean? It's similar to that moment where once you've finished, you've done it, you've gone through everything, you're like, God, my God, I don't think I can do that again.
That's what a lot of guys did. You know, you achieved that goal. George, for example, the guy I rode with at London, he finished, he got his gold in Rio. It's still every day. He sort of asked me, like, why are you doing it? Like, what? Why are you doing this? So you're like, you've done it. You've achieved it.
I love that. I'm emasculator. What is it?
Emasculator.
I'm emasculator.
I basically like putting my hand in the fire and just holding it in there, which is quite strange.
Yeah, I'm a
masochist.
I'm a masochist. Well, we've got to stop there for a moment because we have our very wonderful moment where Francis tells us a question. So, Francis, please, let's have the question of the week.
We've recently been doing it on a theme of the of our guest, so maybe. But the thing is, with anyone who rows is generally a rowing nerd, so yeah. So like
you got to change it up a minute.
Yeah.
No, are you not? I thought
maybe I'll ask you a question about rowing because it's.
I thought we were going to do a nice one.
All right. but I've because now I've said it's on rowing.
Okay. Well, then let's not do on rowing.
Okay. Okay. No. No. Okay. It's what, really, okay, what was the first...
Don't just... It's his first experience. Give it nicely to him. Hold on. Francis.
Do it nicely.
Yeah, Francis, okay. Let's have...
Please.
Francis, let's have the question of the week.
What?
Slowly.
Yeah, nicely.
What?
Say hi, Will.
Hi, Will.
Hi.
This is the question of the week.
This is the question of the week. The question of the week is, what was the first collegiate boat club in America?
Harvard.
No, Washington, wasn't it?
Washington.
Harvard.
That's your answer?
Yeah, Harvard. Washington. Well, you said yeah. That quite quickly.
Well, just because the boy's in the boat. And also a friend of mine studied there, so that's just in my mind.
Washington.
Yeah.
Washington.
Well, we will have the answer in part two.
Oh, look at that. Oh, well, you have to stay on for part two.
That's how we keep people interested.
Oh, look at that, man. I also love it that, well, you had to wear an Adidas t-shirt that saying Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah, just got showed off. Just in case.
Yeah, yeah. We weren't going to mention
this was
it.
The only one that was dry.
Okay, yeah. Sure.
Quite a cool t-shirt.
Yeah, you're always in the water, baby. Yeah, you know, you right. Love to row. Right, well, we also like to read our diary, so I'm going to read you a little bit of my diary. Are you ready?
I can't wait.
Saturday. I had a very strange, and yes, I'm going to say it, slightly upsetting experience on Saturday night.
Oh.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, about to tell you, aren't I?
All right, go on then.
It was Saturday. So I did what 83% of 30-year-old Londoners like to do, and that is have more than a few drinks. I do find it so funny how our drinking culture has changed. If you went up to an alien and explained drinking to them, they would be baffled. I basically make the decision to drink this liquid that costs around £15 a drink and I drink 10 of them. It makes me behave in a stupid way, make wrong decisions, embarrass myself. Sometimes I don't even remember the night and often throw up because of it. I then wake up the next day with the worst headache, regret my night, then do the whole thing again next weekend.
Yeah.
What a strange concept.
Yeah. It's mental, mate.
And do it every weekend.
Every weekend. It's bizarre.
Well, some... actually, I think a large... portion of London do it every night.
Yeah, it's just crazy. But it's the weekend, so of course, here we go.
No Olympic gold medalists, though, I don't think.
Yeah, I saw...
Well, mine got a bit out of hand.
Yeah, I saw you out at...
Did you?
Stringfellows. You were dancing.
You caught me red-handed.
I caught you dancing in Stringfellows.
We were dancing together at Stringfellows.
I paid for a dance and Will Satch walked in.
Yeah. But you're in there
too
every
much
night,
beer.
So there's lots of probability.
I was like,
take her back.
Yeah, why is Will Satch giving me a lap dance in Stringfellows?
If only.
Is that Will Spencer Satch over there giving a lap dance? But it's the weekend, so of course, here we go. I was in Soho at a swanky drinking bar.
Of course you were.
Yeah, and I needed the loo. I ran into the bathroom wanting to be as quick as possible because I was worried I would miss out on something magical happening. What has ever happened on a night out that one could never experience again, but we always think we're going to miss out on something? I checked the cubicles and found the cleanest one. I always like to tend the loo.
That means like clean it, right?
Yeah, I like cleaning it and putting it so I get no splashback.
Do you disinfect it?
I don't disinfect, but no splashback.
Was this just a sit down wee? Because you were being lazy.
It was not a sit down.
He wee to sit down. Anyway.
Sit down wee. Nothing wrong with sit down wee, my friend.
Firstly, I don't sit down wee. Everyone, I
don't
stand
you?
Up. No, I don't stand up.
Why not?
No,
try it.
Okay, fine.
You do.
I will. I will. I'll try it. All right.
Good.
Stop pushing me. I can see why your teammates
when you
feel
do
that they push them. Row. Okay, Will. I'll row.
Another colonic.
Yeah, do it. Pushing me into it. Do a sit down, wee. I sat down and began my business. As I did, I heard the door open and two people came in. However, it wasn't boy voices echoing through my door, but female voices.
Oh dear.
I'd gone into the female bathroom. To make matters worse, they started to talk about how that bloke from Made in Chelsea was at the bar. It dawned on me they were talking about me. They both laughed, not in an excited way, but in more in a
How did it dawn on you? Were you like, who else could be here?
I am in Soho,
so not Chelsea. What are the odds of another member of the cast being...
They both laughed, not in an excited way, but a much more condescending vibe, and agreed I was much shorter in life, before laughing hysterically and leaving. It was as if they had seen the funniest thing in their life standing at the bar.
Well, they smelt you.
Yeah. Oh, they didn't know. I kept quiet. Okay. I didn't say a fucking word. I was left not knowing what to do because I was in the girls' bathroom, but also too embarrassed to go back to the bar knowing I was being laughed at. Perfect Saturday night.
Wait, so then what did you do?
Nothing.
So you just went home?
Yeah, I just went home and cried.
Why didn't you...
Went home and wanked and cried. Didn't do that. Did not do
I
that.
I thought that was how you were going to start the day.
Yeah. I got up this morning.
I woke up.
And wanked.
In my wank pit. And I didn't leave. All day.
Oh, hey, Will, we have to stop there because that's the end of part one. But do not fear, we have part two where we're going to find out so much more about yourself.
Oh,
like, apparently you're not a real ginger.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. I just made that up.
Good.
We'll see you in part two.